The voice of Nassau Community College.
90.3 WHPC.
WHPC HD Garden City.
Wednesday, 5 p.m., time for American Hit Radio, WHPC 90.3
I thought I was going to beat you to it.
Go right ahead.
Too late. You already did it.
Tom Ryan and Huddy Morales Ryan here for the next hour between 5 and 6 to do what we have been doing since like time immemorial.
Keeping up the good work.
Oh, we've been looking at albums that did or did not make the top 40 in equal measure, more or less. This all started with us keeping a list of what we consider to be the 500 most important albums to not make the top 40. I figured it was worth complementing that list with another list of 500 that did.
You'll figure out yet another list to add to the list, I'm sure.
I can't think of another category besides those that did and those that didn't. I think that covers them all.
I think you're going to find a spinoff.
Somehow in there, I'm like saying, I think I got them all covered there one way or the other. But after we made the list of albums that didn't, and we decided to run through albums that did, we did that for a while until we got pretty close to catching up to where we were on our original list. But in the time being, this might be what you're talking about, Heidi, because this is part of like, I guess this
dun,
more
dun,
or less,
dun.
Yeah, makes your prediction true. Well, we were playing through top 40 albums. I'm reviewing my choices, and I'm like, you know, there's a few albums that slipped through the cracks here. And I noticed that I had a significant number more that did make the top 40 versus those that didn't. So I said, let me go back and see what I can find. So what we're doing now is we're catching up by going back to the albums that didn't, by moving through time till we get up to the point in 1967 where I can then just say, okay, enough of all this.
We're going back to the future, kids.
More or less. Back to the past, to the future, to the past, to the future. Even I'm confused.
I know.
But if we were going to drop this album chronologically into our list of 500, this album would land at number 23 on our list. It was released in July of 1966, never hit the chart, and the artist is Tim Hardin. The album is simply called Tim Hardin 1. I will admit openly that I'm not at all surprised why I would have missed this the first time around on my list. Tim was never really a guy that was on my radar very much. He was somebody that I knew of, knew some of his material, mostly in the hands of other people. But I never got incredibly deep into the folk scene as it was unfolding. And I just figured that he was more or less just another guy on the folk scene. Now, this is a bit ignorant of me. And over a 20-year stretch of doing this sort of thing with music history and everything else, within that 20 years, becoming a crazy Bob Dylan fanatic, for starters, and then familiarizing myself with some of the other people who were on the New York folk scene in the early 60s, I began to realize that it wasn't really the type of thing that could be or even should be, you know, mocked or looked down on, because so much came out of that that was truly important. And Tim Hardin is exactly one of those guys. There are reviews that I've read for this album that say that this album is as important as Bob Dylan's albums from the exact same era. So it gave me pause and made me, you know, want to go back and investigate. Now, the reason I think that another reason, I should say, why I overlooked this album is that it's very inconsistent. There's a lot of stuff on it that just sounds to me like somewhat generic blues. And this has also led to like what one of my main criticisms were of the original folk era when it was unfolding in the 60s. Looking back on it as a rock and roll fan, which I have been my whole life, the folk era seemed sort of like a lot of posturing and a bit of silliness. To me, like, you know, college guys in sweaters singing harmony about black oppression. I always thought that that was rather incongruous. Another factor was that there was an awful lot of folk singers that would rely very heavily on public domain material, which is to say old songs that went back to the point where you couldn't even trace who wrote them. So that was very common, and I would think that it was almost like too easy. And then yet another branch of the folk singers would rely on things like the blues and stuff like that, finding material in that category that they would latch onto and do their songs with blues progressions. And it didn't seem particularly unique or interesting to me. It took a long time for me to undo those prejudices. And you'll hear on this album that Tim Hardin is, to use an inappropriate word, you know, guilty, I suppose, by my original assessment of some of these things. But I think what ended up happening was I looked back and played the album. And I'm like, so what? I mean, the fact of the matter is, he became, by the time this album was released, a fairly incredible songwriter. And the stuff on this album that is written by him is mostly astounding. So if there's a couple of songs in between the stuff that is outrageously great that sounds sort of lackluster, well, so be it. I mean, the point is, what I'm trying to do is point out the relevance of Hardin's work, even if he is basically occasionally lapsing into something which is maybe a bit more ordinary in comparison to some of his better material. As if the album is called Tim Hardin 1, he didn't really release many albums in his lifetime. There's Tim Hardin 1, Tim Hardin 2. It is very arguable that Tim Hardin 2 is a better album. Some of the reviews that I've read state that they consider it to be the better of the two. I respectfully disagree. After that, there was a live album. And then after that, there were just collections of things put together that he didn't really ever finish because he had developed a rather serious drug habit that killed him by the early 70s. And his story ended very quickly. So there's not a lot to go by. So it's another reason why I figured this album is very important to include it, because of the people who represent the folk scene, Tim Hardin has written some of the most important and lasting songs of that era. And his work is also quite rare or rarefied in the sense that there's not much of it. So let's get started. Let's play the album, at least the opening track from Tim Hardin 1. As I said, the album was released in July 1966, never made the pop charts at all. But the opening track is one of the beauties on the album. It's called Don't Make Promises.
It seems the songs we're singing are all about tomorrow. Tunes of promises you can't keep. Every moment bringing a love I can only borrow. You're telling me lies in your sleep. Do you think I'm not aware of what you're saying or why you're saying it? Is it hard to keep me where you want me staying? Don't go on betraying it. Don't make promises you can't keep. We had a chance to find it. Our time was now or never. You promised me things that I need, but then the things behind it took away the chance forever. You're telling me lies in your sleep. Do you think I'm not aware of
what you're saying, why you're saying. Is it hard to keep me where you want me staying? Don't go on betraying. Don't make promises you can't keep. Don't make promises you can't keep.
You know, like I said, I'll confess to the fact that I had really overlooked Tim Hardin's catalog. And when I heard that song, I was sort of stunned. I'm like, that is such a great song. It's so incredibly well written. How could I have not been familiar with it? And it turns out that it's a song that's been covered by a lot of people. One of his biggest fans really was Bobby Darin. Bobby Darin, in later years, like more or less built a career around, you know, Tim Hardin's material. He's the person that made some of his songs incredibly famous. I was actually even told that a favor was paid back and that when Tim Hardin would cover a Bobby Darin song called Simple Song of Freedom. So there you hear basically what had happened. The way that I see it is when Tim Hardin was first signed, he was pretty much, you could say, just another folk singer. I mean, you could imagine how many people were walking around, say, in New York City in the Greenwich Village area with their folk guitar, trying to get into clubs. They'd get in and they'd sit down and they'd play their blues. They'd play their stuff from the public domain. They'd pass around the cup and they'd get up. And then the next day would come in and sit down and do their set for an hour. And this would go on, you know, all week long, all month long, all, you know,
for days on end.
Right, exactly. For years on end, really. It's probably the type of thing that is still happening in Nashville with incredibly famous,
talented.
Incredibly unfamous, but very talented people who in Nashville more or less play for free. I've seen it with my own eyes. You could go into.
Yep, if you swing a cat, you'd knock them all out.
Yep, you could, you're right. Shoot, you could swing a cat and you could basically blind three really talented songwriters. You can walk to any bar in Nashville and sit down, and if there's, say that there's live music that day, you're pretty much guaranteed to hear three different really talented bands or singer-songwriters and realize that you're really doing nothing but paying for the beer that you're drinking because nobody's making any money.
Yeah, they're working for tips.
That was the New York scene in the early 60s. And the problem was most of these guys, if truth be told, you know, were more or less pushing the same sort of material. You really needed to have something unique in order to stand out. So Tim Hardin singing the same blues-based material and everything else as everybody else wasn't going to do it for him. But when he started writing his own songs, now he's got something that nobody else has. And just because you write songs doesn't necessarily mean you're going to write good songs. So if you were in New York and you started to write good songs, became a lot easier to get a record deal. And this is where the wheat and the chaff started to get separated.
Uh-huh.
And where some of the, you know, the more talented people who were part of that scene began to rise. People like Tim Hardin and Fred Neil. Of course, that's what happened with Bob Dylan. It's pretty much exactly the same sort of thing all around. Now, Tim, when he started recording, was doing that sort of generic blues-based stuff. And it really wasn't doing much for him. It wasn't until he started writing his own songs that they started paying attention to him, and he got the record contract to put out this album, Tim Hardin 1. But what he didn't know was that the people who owned, you know, who now more or less owned him, the label, Verve, actually,
mm-hmm.
Was able to do what they wanted, and they got the rights to all of his old material. So in order to flesh it out, they put on a lot of his older blues recordings.
Uh-huh.
So to my mind, when I first heard it, I'm like, this is only half of a good album. Now what I'm hearing, after playing it a number of times, is I hear an album with a lot of diversity. Really, like a moving song like what we just heard called Don't Make Promises that could really work for anybody. You could give that song out.
Interesting progression of thought there.
It's what? I'm
interesting
sorry.
Progression of thought there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it took patience and time for me to come to that. But like, I guess I'm telling this story now because the next two tracks, I think, fall into a category that I would have instantly would have previously been dismissive of, like, they really didn't do much to move me. Now I hear them and I'm like, this is kind of cool that this guy can write these really great folk songs, but he also has one foot in the blues at a time when the British invasion was doing the more or less the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. He's here in America in New York City doing that, but in folk clubs. So he himself wasn't very pleased about the fact that the album ended up being this mashup. I'm sure that if he had his way, he would have waited longer to have put out an album full of like all of his more recent compositions. But some of the old songs made the cut as far as Verve was concerned. Here's two of them back to back. We're going to play Green Rocky Road into Smuggling Man.
It's a green rocky road, promenading green. Tell me who y'all love, tell me who you love. If your mama chewed tobacco, ooga-dooga sold a cracker. It's a green rocky road, promenading green. Tell me who you love, who you love. If you got a carpet on your floor, you'll never get to Baltimore. It's a green rocky road, promenading green. Tell me who you love. See the bird up sky, you don't run, you just fly. It's a green rock and roll, promenading green. Tell me who y'all love, tell me who you love. Man, now I know just what to do. I'm an old time smuggling man, I know just what to do. I sell guns to the Arab, I sell dynamite to the Jews. I'm a rum runner and I built myself a ship. I'm a rum runner, I've built myself a ship. No matter how many slaves I sell, I have just enough money for one more trip. I sell whiskey to the Indians, and I smuggle in the gin. I sell whiskey to the Indians, smuggled in a gym. If you want anything illegal, ask old Timmy to bring it in. I'm a old-time smuggling man, I know what to do. I'm a old-time smuggling man, I know just what to do. I sell guns to the Arabs, I sell dynamite to the Jews.
There you go. You see what I'm talking about, how those songs basically have a much more sort of a generic feel to them, but still unique and interesting in terms of the writing and the lyrics from Tim Hardin. Keep in mind, this is a man who has been covered by not only Bobby Darin, but Joan Baez, Johnny Cash, The Four Tops, Johnny Rivers, Robert Plant, Rod Stewart, Neil Young, even The Carpenters. All of these people have, like, eventually, you know, touched on Tim Hardin's song. His early life, he was actually born and raised in Eugene, Oregon. Eventually did a stint in the Marine Corps. Said that was actually where he first came into contact with heroin, which ended up becoming a lifelong problem for him. But after he was discharged from the Marine Corps, he moved to New York City in 1961, where he was going to go to college at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, but ended up getting dismissed due to truancy. So he figured that maybe he would bum around Greenwich Village, play some blues, and see if he could have a career doing that, which is where those other songs pretty much come from. That was like what he was hoping to do. More was needed from him in order to basically really make his mark. That's where songs like the first track, Don't Make Promises, come into play, because you can hear the strength in that, I think, comparably. It's rather remarkable. But anyway, sometime in the early 60s, he also ended up moving to Boston for a short while, figuring he could maybe make some money by probably bouncing back and forth between the cities. And when he was there, he met a record producer named Eric Jacobson. Jacobson had another client who was a harmonica player-songwriter named John Sebastian, who would eventually go on to form the Lovin' Spoonful. So it was Jacobson who signed him to a deal, or got him to basically arranged a meeting with Columbia Records, acting as his manager, and got him signed to Columbia, where a lot of these recordings were made as demos. But Columbia, having heard nothing in particular that they thought was going to be commercially viable, ended up not releasing any of it and released him from his contract. So that was where some of these songs came from, basically abandoned demos by Columbia.
Oh.
After that, he then moved to Los Angeles for a short while, where he actually met an actress that he married. Her name was Susan Yardley Morse, or Susan Yardley. And then together they moved back to New York. This time he signed to Verve, and that was just before this album was put together. And Verve basically signed him to the contract to put this album together when it finally saw release, his first album, in July of 1966. If you hear harmonica on the record, that is John Sebastian of the Lovin' Spoonful playing harmonica on the record. Also worth noting, there's a couple of big names on this. You know, Gary Burton is playing vibraphones. Earl Palmer, who, boy, he plays on everything, so what else is new? But there is Earl Palmer on drums on this record as well, just for points of interest. Next track on that, we're going to play through the album in its entirety, as we always do. So let's play the next track then. From the album called Tim Hardin One. This is called How Long?
How long? How long? Has the evening train been gone? Baby, won't you tell me how long? I'm riding a railroad. I've headed out of town. Way things is, it don't look like I ought to hang around. How long? How long? Has the evening train been gone?
you tell me how long?
Making love has been as much as I could hope it would be. Every night has been like one night to me. You've got me feeling again, the feeling you gave me before. But to you, those nights, like any other night tonight, just one more. Don't try to tell me that you care enough to love me when you can't even do the things I need you to do. And don't make me listen to words you think will please me when pleasing me don't mean anything to you. Just one more night makes no difference as long as there's another night to make right what you did wrong. Last days we had of one another will have to do. While you're on your way, while you're on your way,
how did the feeling feel to you?
There, back to back, I think, again, you can hear the two different sides of Tim Hardin, what his music represented. The first track, which we heard, called How Long, more or less, it's like a rock and roll blues number. You know, very straightforward, but actually done in a very credible manner. I would say, you know, very similar to what was coming out of England in a sense. But the song that we just heard shows the more sensitive and, I think, very uniquely original songwriting side of what Hardin was about. Definitely the side that jumped out at me and made me realize, you know, how come I wasn't paying attention to this sooner? It's to this day, it still kind of shocks me. Even as I'm compiling my lists of the greatest albums, this and, you know, you know, wouldn't I have at least looked into it? It seems odd that I let this get past me, because he's always been one of these guys that you hear about, a very important figure historically, and yet I kept him on the periphery. And
you weren't into it. You weren't ready for it yet.
I think that's what it is. You basically needed some time. I think by the time that I heard it, I was finally in the right frame of mind to be able to accept the wholeness of what he's about. And I think the reason I like this album is because I think this is the album that best represents, I guess, there's an innocence about the first album, as you would expect there always would be. But there's also a real purity in his sound. And I think it might have been affected later on, because sometime after this album came out, he was diagnosed with pleurisy, which is, I didn't know what that was until just moments ago, apparently a disease that affects your lungs, makes it difficult probably to sing. It definitely makes breathing painful. So this would have affected him. Might have also been a factor in his heroin addiction that made it very hard, because as time went by, heroin became an incredible part of his life. So if you're dealing with heroin on one side and pleurisy on the other.
It's hard to imagine, you know, like someone playing such mellow music. But then again, I guess heroin is supposed to, you know, it makes people fall asleep, right? So.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to basically.
That's the image you always see on TV.
Banging out loud bar chords. You know, this is. But this is really before that took a hold.
Oh, okay.
But the style, I mean, his style didn't really significantly change, but his ability to perform did. And his songwriting also was affected. He essentially just stopped writing as much as he did. He wrote everything on this album.
That's the fallacy of drug use, is that people think it's going to enhance their creativity and find that it does the opposite.
I absolutely cannot believe that that would be true with heroin. I've never seen that enhance anybody's career ever. And if I was going to sit down and make a list, I could probably, without even trying, think of 50 people whose careers went downhill almost immediately the second they started messing with hard drugs. You lose your own sense of trying to care. And so your material suffers because there's less effort. I mean, there's so many examples. I'm not even going to single anybody out, but they keep coming to mind. After Hardin put out his two most lauded albums, this album, Tim Hardin 1, and the follow-up, Tim Hardin 2, which, like I said, a lot of people would go to bat for. You could really lean on either album as being his best. Other albums that are coming out, like Tim Hardin 4, This Is Tim Hardin, Tim Hardin 5, what they all were compilations of the old blues material that was recorded before this album, the old Columbia stuff. So he wasn't even recording new material at that point. Albums were coming out in the late 60s that had songs on them that were 6-7 years old. You can't put out a song from 1963 and 1969. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just makes no sense.
Well, some people got away with that historically, but anyway.
Very, very, very few.
Very few.
Very
Beatles.
Few. Beatles. You think about, imagine like, you know, She Loves You being on the White Album, for example. And I think my point is made. So much had changed in that time frame, that going back 5 or 6 years in 68 or 69 just was going to render you obsolete. And this is another problem that was haunting Tim Hardin. That was not a problem in 1966, though, with this album. So let's play the next track, another beauty, called It'll Never Happen Again.
I remember our first affair.
all the pain, always rain. It'll never happen again. It'll never happen again. Every time I leave you alone, I remember a time never happen again. It'll never happen again. Why can't you be where I want you to be? Why can't you see you got to change to love me? I remember our first affair, all the pain, always rain around my eyes. It'll never happen again. It'll never happen again.
House Side One ends right there with "It'll Never Happen Again." Thanks to Frank for calling in, a regular listener and a friend of the show. And I apologize for hanging up on you once again.
Oh, my God.
I am notorious.
And that face plant on the phone.
You know what it is? I dropped the phone off of the table this time, so I had to hold the phone against my head because I saw the phone fall off the table. And when I pushed the phone into my head, that's where...
Oh, you face planted it.
Yeah, the button on this phone is on the receiver. So if I push it against my face, I automatically hang up. I will never be able to own a phone like that. So I apologize, Frank. Oh, by the way, I should mention really quickly right now, big show coming up this Friday night, having like three different bands playing at an American Legion Hall in Huntington, all the way up New York Avenue at the very top. I'm sorry, I don't know what the post is, but if you're on New York Avenue into Huntington and you're going up toward Hale Site, go all the way up around the traffic circle on the left-hand side. It's going to be three bands playing. My band being the middle, I said my band. This is actually funny. My old band, I was in a band called the Blackguards before I was in the Last Hombres.
Way a long time ago. Kids.
5 or 6 years ago. And we are actually reuniting for this show. And it's great fun. We've rehearsed ourselves a short set. So it'll be us. It'll be Aaron Santariello and the Gunslingers before us. And after us will be Chris James and the Hideaways. Fabulous band. I promise you, they will rock the house.
It's going to be so awesome.
And I really hope that we will, too. It'll be worth it to come down and see if we can hold it together. I think that'll be interesting to see what happens after you get the same four guys back together after 5 or 6 years. But anyway, like I said, that's taking place in Huntington this Friday night.
And you can find the event page on Facebook. It's the NIRMA event, or you can find it on, it's a Halloween happening. It's a... When is it? Let's see. Oh, here I have the Legion Post. It's Legion Post 360, 1 Mill Dam Road in Huntington, New York. There's a full cash bar and free parking.
Fantastic.
There you go.
Starting time is? First band is 9, I think.
It says the doors are at 8 p.m.
Yeah, doors at 8. First band will be at 9. That makes sense.
There you go. And it's only $10, and you get tickets at Eventbrite.
Yeah, 10 bucks at Eventbrite.
Online.
15 at the door.
At the door.
Well, come on down. We also need somewhere they can find it again. If you go on Facebook, there's an events page. Can you find it?
Yeah, there's it's actually an Eventbrite page, and it's the NIRMA Halloween happening. If you just Google that, you'll find the Eventbrite.
Fantastic.
Page.
Thank you, Heidi.
No problem.
That. Meanwhile, let's get back to the album. Side two. If there's one song that I associate Tim Hardin with, it would be this next song. And I think that it's more or less enough on its own to justify including this album. If you haven't heard enough yet, this song to me like encompasses everything that the man is about. Tim Hardin's own composition called Reason to Believe.
If I listened long enough to you, I'd find a way to believe that it's all true. Knowing that you lie straight faced while I cry, still I'd look to find a reason to believe. Someone like you makes it hard to live without somebody else. Someone like you makes it easy to give. Never think of myself. If I gave you time to change my mind, I'd find a way to leave the past behind. Knowing that you lied straight faced while I cried, still I'd look to find a reason to believe. If I listened long enough to you, I'd find a way to believe it's all true. Knowing that you lied straight faced while I cried, still I'd look to find a reason to believe.
Probably one of the best songs Rod Stewart ever recorded, that a lot of people have ever recorded. And there it is in its initial release on the album called Tim Hardin 1. It's interesting to note, you hear all the strings that are on that, right? Tim Hardin never heard the strings until the album was released. He had no idea that strings were going to be put on it, and he was very upset when he heard the strings. It was a touch that he thought more or less, I guess, took away its credibility in terms of being like folk music. But I have to admit that I am very fond of the strings. I think they add a sensitivity to the song and enrich it to a certain degree. I can understand why every artist has the right to decide whether or not something like that should be done to their music. And so I sympathize with Tim Hardin, who basically was offended when he heard them for the very fact that he wasn't aware of it and didn't have any say in it. But I think that in the long run, they actually managed to benefit a lot of the material. It's on about half of the songs on the album. Now let's play two more from this side back to back. I think side two is actually the better side of the album anyway, but we'll play now Never Too Far, and we'll segue that into a song called Part of the Wind.
Things you say change your way like dark today, the way you are. Day to day, your lies will play till you're away, but never too far. Do you feel more like going on when I say I wasn't wrong to choose you? Does it ease your heart to say tomorrow brings another way to lose you? In my wandering sense of time, I'll try to see enough to rhyme your changing line. In my slipping sort of step, I'll try to do much better yet with what I get.
like going on. When I say I wasn't wrong to choose you, does it ease your heart to say tomorrow brings another way to lose you? Things you say will change your way like dark today, the way you are. Day to day, your lies will play till you're away, but never too far. Falling through my heart into loving you, flying wingless, wondering what to do, asking the future for you. Fortune falling with my heart, luck be trusted in time, trusting the breeze to be mine, hoping you'll be. Running back to you, I'm waiting for the sun, waiting, hoping you're the one. I won't chase you if you run.
Each time I do this, I write an essay, so I'm going to read this real quick before we finish off the album. For most of my life, Tim Hardin was little more than a name. I knew very little about him or his music, only that he was a Greenwich Village musician who always existed on the periphery of the folk music scene without ever catching the limelight. I knew his music exclusively from others who covered his best-known songs, Bobby Darin with If I Were a Carpenter, or Rod Stewart with Reason to Believe, but I never felt the need to pursue him any further. It was my loss. For a long while, I harbored a prejudice against the pre-rock and roll folk movement because it struck me as too precious, too strident, too self-righteous, or some combination of all these things. I still hear that in some material from the pre-64 era, but my prejudice closed my mind to genuinely talented songwriters like Fred Neil, Dave Van Ronk, and most significantly, Tim Hardin. It was like I put up blinders that prevented me from acknowledging one of the most important musical movements of the 20th century. So when I finally allowed myself to think openly, I had some catching up to do. It wasn't until I was in my 50s, yes, I know, and I am ashamed to admit it, that I grew genuinely curious enough to spare 30 minutes of my life and listen to Hardin's debut release, Tim Hardin 1. And the experience was disarming. The album is so understated that I almost let it slip by, even with my full attention. The opener seemed nice enough, but a few blues-style tracks cropped up early in the track list that struck me as generic, as we heard, and allowed me to grow distracted enough to think that maybe I was right all along. I stuck with it, though, and found that the album not only was growing on me, but enveloping me. Reason to Believe is an undeniably gorgeous piece of work.
That's a great song.
Right. But listen to Hardin deliver his own words in that gentle, vulnerable way gave me chills. Other songs like Never Too Far and While You're On Your Way sounded almost as familiar, and in all likelihood probably were, as they'd existed for decades without my acknowledgement. How could I have ignored something as beautiful as this? Reading up on the album, I discovered that Hardin himself had reservations about this record. Some of the blues numbers were demos that he did not intend for release, and he took exception to the strings that were laden over some of the more sensitive tracks. While I agree that the blues numbers are not of the same caliber as his more introspective material, they at least provide pacing, and with all due respect, I completely disagree with his assessment of the strings. Hardin probably didn't like them because he rehearsed and recorded the songs without them, and certainly didn't want a producer to take license with his debut album. But the strings... Excuse me. I got the wrong page.
Oops, out of order.
Here are a model of sensitive restraint. When the album ended, I needed to play it again, and then again, until I found myself listening all day, loving a record that I deliberately neglected for decades.
Shame on you.
Prejudice is an ugly thing. It prevents you from seeing plain truths that allow you to hold uninformed opinions. I'm quite grateful that I finally let go of my own. Let's pick up where we left off now. Two more tracks from the album, including one of my personal favorites. First track is Ain't Gonna Do Without, and we'll follow that with the incredibly beautiful song called Misty Roses.
They call me Long Talk Timmy, 'cause I know what love's about. They call me Long Talk Timmy, I know what love's about. If my baby leaves, Timmy ain't gonna do without. You got to have more than one woman if you want to get along. You got to have more than one woman if you want to get along. If one don't cheat you, the other will do you wrong. Tall Timmy, I know what love's about. They call me Long Tall Timmy, I know what love's about. If my baby leaves, I ain't gonna do without. You got to have more than one woman if you want to get along. You got to have more than one woman if you want to get along. Want to get along. If one don't cheat you, the other will do. I know what love's about. They call me a Long Tall Timmy, 'cause I know what love's about. If my baby leaves me, I ain't gonna do without. You got to have more than one woman if you wanna get along. You got to have more than one woman if you want to get along. If one don't teach you, the other will do.
You look to me like misty roses. Too soft to touch, but too lovely to leave alone. If I could be like misty roses, I'd love you much. You're too lovely to leave alone. Flowers often cry, but too late to find that their beauty has been lost with their peace of mind. You look to me like love forever. Too good to last, but too lovely not to try. If I believe in love forever, I'd forget the past. You're too lovely not to try.
That was fun and beautiful, and this hour went so fast, I thought I was going to have enough time left over. From his play tracks from his second album, which I can't, but it would have been interesting to play You Upset the Grace of Living, Black Sheep Boy, If I Were a Carpenter, all great stuff from Tim Hardin, too.
Wow.
But that's for another day. Meanwhile, here is the final track of this album, Tim Hardin 1, called How Can We Hang On to a Dream? Take care, everybody, and I hope you can hang on until Friday. We'll be back on air then. We'll see you at 5 o'clock on Friday.
What can I say? She's walking away from what we've seen. What can I do? Still loving you, it's all a dream. How can we hang on to a dream? How can it really be the way it seems? What can I do? She's the same way through with how it was. What will I try? I still don't see why she says what she does. How can we hang on to a dream? How can it really be the way it seems? What can I say? She's walking away from what we've seen. What can I do? Still loving you, it's all a dream. How can we hang on to a dream? How can it really be the way it seems? How can we hang on to a dream?